people ask me this question quite a lot, and I always say that there are absolutely no averages in a homeless person. But if you want to give me sort of a kind of an average snapshot of a person, I'd say they're between the ages of, say, 35 and 55. They've probably been to prison in the past. They've probably had very disadvantaged backgrounds right from the start. They probably have a major mental illness such as schizophrenia. They probably have a comorbid addiction problem as well, drugs or alcohol, and possibly gambling. And by this stage in their lives, they probably have some significant physical health problems as well. So that is a very unhappy, you know, snapshot.
This is the picture of your average homeless man. And with mental health and physical health issues as difficult to manage as this, it probably doesn't come as a shock to you that your average homeless man will die 25 years before an ordinary man.
Oh, hi, I'm Julie Smith. I'm the team leader of the Matthew Talbot Hostel's primary healthcare clinic.
Julie has been working in her current role at the clinic for the last 5 years and initially started working at the clinic in the 90s. The current service is extremely comprehensive. There is a whole suite of mental health experts, as well as optometrists, podiatrists, and of course, GPs.
So what we do is provide a fairly comprehensive mental health service here at the hostel. We have two visiting consultant psychiatrists who are fabulous at what they do. We also have credentialed mental health nurses who can work alone and assessing people. We also have a mental health nurse practitioner, which is fantastic because that person as a nurse can assess and treat people with medication alongside work from the psychiatrist. In the past, we've had a psychologist. We're missing one at the moment. That's someone we could do with. We offer a lot of different sorts of health services. So we have a GP two mornings a week. We have a fabulous optometrist that's been coming to us for about 25 years once a week. We have volunteer podiatrists that also come here around about once a week. Our nurses run smoking cessation clinics, and they also run a metabolic health clinic. This is alongside running the general health clinic where men can turn up anytime they like. There are no barriers to accessing this service and they can come in with any type of problem that they wish.
Going to see your family GP isn't always an option as a homeless person. So clinics like Matthew Talbot provide accessible, free care 365 days a year.
Going to see a doctor these days is getting more and more expensive. Homeless people simply can't pay, and there are, I think, fewer and fewer doctors that bulk bill. So that's one issue. Another issue is that it's very common that you have to wait when you go to an emergency department or if you go to your GP's office, even if you have an appointment. Some people simply are unable to wait. It may be because they're agitated. It might be because they're hearing voices. It may be because they're embarrassed that they smell or they feel that they stand out in the crowd. Another thing is that not all GPs are, you know, fantastic in understanding the needs of a person who is homeless. And so simply a homeless person may not feel welcome, not just in the waiting room, but in the consulting room to get across what your issue is in less than 5 minutes when you're troubled is really difficult.
The University of Technology Sydney has partnered with the Matthew Talbot Clinic to understand how homeless men are using these services.
My name is Michael Roach, Dr. Michael Roach. I'm senior lecturer and currently director of postgraduate nursing studies. I work for the Centre for Health Services Management and the Faculty of Health at UTS.
Michael is one of the researchers on the study. He says along with mental health issues, the men have other physical issues like diabetes and arthritis.
Things like diabetes, certainly we see cardiac problems. We see in our research we've come across some notable podiatry and other physical issues like arthritis, which seems to be a little more prevalent than in normal run-of-the-mill sample of anyone. We're not quite sure of the causation, but in any case, that's certainly supported in the literature and it's echoed in our findings.
Specifically, Michael and his team spoke to the men to find out why and how they use the service.
We looked at the type of problems that men were presenting with. We looked at their perception of their main health problem and how that was affecting their life. We looked at their perception of the service because we were very interested in what was attracting them to this service. We looked at their perception in how this service and the care that was provided there was facilitating appropriate health care. So that might mean admission to hospital in some instances, or it might mean preventing admission and referral to other tertiary type services, specialist type services, endocrinologist or a mental health team or whatever it might be.
The homeless community is very hard to engage when it comes to healthcare, and men find out about the clinic through word of mouth or by staying at the attached hostel. However they end up there, Michael says the men are very happy with the service.
Men definitely report that they're happy. In fact, out of the men that we surveyed, I cannot recall a negative comment. They certainly find that the service provided is appropriate and supportive, and they have identified for us a number of things which help them access the service and help them stay well in their terms.
This may be down to the level of trust and type of people that work at the clinic. Julie Smith again.
Well, I think trust is an enormous aspect of what we do. I mean, a person doesn't have to trust us, and sometimes, you know, they in some cases perhaps they never will. It's really helpful if they do, but we have to gain that trust. It's not an automatic thing. That's why we have an open access to service. We've got no barriers or as few barriers as possible to getting a service, so no one has to pay. No one has to make an appointment. We try to make people feel welcome. I think one of the aspects of working here that's incredibly important is that you need to want to work with homeless people. You need to have a sort of natural curiosity, and interest in people who are homeless, and at the same time, you know, be friendly, open, transparent. And people know if you're not being authentic, and they'll tell you in the most colourful way.
While the goal of services like these is to help men's health, it can also cause a reduction in the number of homeless men presenting to the emergency department.
Currently, NGOs do provide these services. They provide these services to facilitate good healthcare. That's their primary aim, but it does have the effect of reducing reliance on acute services like emergency departments and acute wards in hospitals. At least that's what we suspect.
I think one of the things that we do really well is that we prevent people from going to hospital unnecessarily. So we, you know, spend a lot of time providing healthcare that prevents the need for people to actually present to a GP or present to an emergency department. That saves the Department of Health an awful lot of money. But more importantly, it provides healthcare for someone at the right time so that we can actually sort of diagnose, assess, you know, maintain their health so that their health only improves, or at least the conditions are stabilized rather than getting worse. And that's often the thing that actually they end up going to the emergency department when it's too late.
The Matthew Talbot Clinic is one of the only services of its kind left in Sydney. And with the homeless population as high as it is and emergency departments as stressed as they are, it's pretty important to keep services like this running.